Hi, I'm James Howard. I'm the Director of Economic Policy at the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions. We're a worldwide body of trade unions that represents workers in 148 countries around the world.
Okay, and that includes the AFL-CIO, is that right?
Oh, certainly. That's our biggest affiliate, in fact.
Okay, so you're the global body that has as members lots of organizations like the AFL-CIO, the national...
Yeah,
okay.
The National Trade Union Centers are members of the ICFTU.
Okay, terrific. So you keep an eye on things from the global perspective with respect to labor issues, and you've been paying a lot of attention to corporate globalization and things that have been happening in that field. How has the ICFTU been involved in talks and discussions of corporate globalization?
Well, at a number of levels. Firstly, we support the case for binding legislation at an international level, which would ensure that workers' rights are protected throughout the world, so that you avoid a situation where a multinational company, for example, Motorola, would be able to go to a country like Malaysia and operate while refusing to respect the basic rights of the workers they employ. And ultimately, we'd like to see international guarantees of those rights through the World Trade Organization. So that's, I think, one of the first and most important ways in which we react to corporate globalization. Secondly, at the same time as that, we're also engaged in trying to encourage those companies to live up to basic standards through a more direct approach, through encouraging one-to-one negotiations between those unions and between international trade unions at a global level, so that you would have, for example, the French food group Danone has a collective agreement effectively at global level with the trade union for their sector, which covers certain basic rights for the workers in any country wherever they are employed.
Okay, so the first thing you said there was that you want to ensure international guarantees of worker protections through the World Trade Organization, things like the right to organize, for instance.
Yeah.
The World Trade Organization has responded that that's basically impossible or it will take a long time to do that. Some union people have said that it's not worth trying to reform the World Trade Organization, but it should be gotten rid of. ICFTU's position is to reform it?
Well, yes. I mean, our position is that the WTO is... it's going to have to recognize the case for adopting rules on social rights, on gender issues, on environmental issues, and very much on labor rights. I think what we saw in Seattle with the collapse of the WTO negotiations, what we've seen since then with protests about other issues, about the IMF and the World Bank, are really just a kind of a foretaste of the amount of public disquiet about the way the WTO is run at the moment and the fact that there are no guarantees of those basic rules inside the WTO system. And really, I don't see a new trade round going very far unless the WTO can take on board the lessons from Seattle and start to think about how to incorporate those rules. But as to the question as to whether one should abolish the WTO, we don't see that as a valid course either. The WTO has got 140 member countries, and not one of those is proposing the abolition of the WTO. We don't see it as terribly realistic, and we do believe that you do have to have global rules about trade, but those rules do need to be rewritten to include the basic social, environmental, and other criteria that I've mentioned.
Okay. How then does the ICFTU hope to make this happen? Certainly in places like the United States, the corporate lobby is very strong and they're fighting any kind of effort to even mention labor rights, much less labor rights or environmental rights that are protected by things, by the same trade sanctions that say patent and copyright protections are protected.
Yeah.
What is the ICFTU's strategy?
Well, for us, I mean, that very example you raise of intellectual property rights draws attention to the disequilibrium in the world economy at the moment between the fact that it seems to be accepted that companies can have guarantees of their rights, but there is no reciprocal idea that workers should have a guarantee of their rights as well. And yet both kinds of guarantee are equally valid in a globalized economy. As to how we're going to make pressure, that is in the end through political pressure at national level. In the US, I think there is a strong case for that kind of progress. I think that regardless of the fact that the Bush administration may not want to include labor rights, they're likely to find that they don't get trade promotion authority if they don't include labor rights as part of the mandate they want to have for the talks. In the European Union, I think that's the same kind of recognition, and labor rights are part of the EU's agenda for Qatar at the moment, and we're determined to keep it there. And in Europe as well, you've seen a phenomenon whereby citizens have been staging kinds of protests because they feel they're not part of the process and they're not being included in the preparations for Qatar and other kinds of intergovernmental discussions. In developing countries as well, the position of the governments who are opposing us is, I think, quite shaky and is not really founded on the fact that those governments have not taken on board the consequences of China joining the WTO. Because if you look at India, if you look at Mexico, if you look at any other of the major developing countries, they just can't compete with China at the present time when China violates all worker rights in order to increase its sales on the world markets. And I think when those governments have come to terms with the way the world is changing, they will see that for them as well there is an interest in having those rights guaranteed for the WTO. So, you know, we're working on changing the position of those governments in that way as well.
Okay, so in the United States and elsewhere, national-level political pressure, it's up to people in these countries, in the individual countries, to tell their national governments to negotiate for things like worker rights and environmental protections. And since you mentioned the World Trade Organization meeting in Qatar that's coming up, maybe we should just mention that briefly.
Yes.
The next WTO meeting is in Qatar, which is not a very democratic nation.
No.
How is the ICFTU going to be involved in that, and what are your comments about the simple fact that it's being held in Qatar?
Well, I think it's a terrible choice of venue because just for the very fact that there it's so small that there is no there is no accommodation there to take the number of people who want to go to Qatar, who would want to be involved in a major public event of that sort, means that they are denying the possibilities for civil society to take part in that conference. There's no way it could be anything like Seattle, for the simple reason that the Qatari authorities will deny visas to anybody who wants to get into Qatar on the grounds of the lack of space in that country. So it looks like the WTO trade negotiators are running away and hiding from the pressure, the spotlight of international opinion, which is a terrible signal to send, I think, and will backfire against the WTO. But secondly, I mean, it is, in any case, just a blatantly repressive country. It's not a democracy. There are no trade unions in Qatar. There's no experience of dealing with demonstrations either, so I'm a bit worried that you will face serious confrontations there, because when the NGOs who do get in try to protest, the police there will have no experience in how to deal with that kind of public dissent and will overreact. So you could have a lot of violence as a result of that that situation.
Do you think that the WTO is holding its meeting in Qatar because of what happened in Seattle?
Well, I think for many of the governments which are most opposed to labor rights you know, workers' issues, people's issues, they did not like the situation in Seattle where there were the mass protests and demonstrations on the streets. And when Qatar offered itself as a venue for the conference, there was a huge amount of support from those authoritarian governments, and they were very, very glad to accept that invitation. Of course, nobody else had applied to host the conference, because after Seattle, there were very few countries who wanted to host the WTO anymore. But I think certainly there's a connection there between the dislike of some of those governments for manifestations of popular involvement in trade, and the choice of a venue which excludes, by its very nature, excludes those public protesters from going there.
Okay, and how will the ICFTU be involved in the WTO talks in Qatar in November?
Well, we will be taking a delegation to Qatar. We'll be doing that because partly to make it clear that we're not going to go away. We're not going to be shut out simply because of the choice of a difficult venue. So we hope to have a reasonably large union delegation there. We'll be organizing our meetings in Qatar and talking to the media, you know, to the major TV networks, the press and so on. And we'll also be trying to take part inside the meeting as well, to get our people nominated onto government delegations where they can. And that did happen in Seattle, so it's quite possible. And we're going to be trying to make our presence felt that way as well. And at the same time, in many of our affiliates, the Canadians, for example, are organizing events in Canada to coincide with the start of the WTO conference in Qatar. And they're talking about various sorts of action at the workplace and on the media in Canada draw attention to the inequalities in the globalization process and the fact that the WTO rules need to be changed very substantially to include the basic sort of social concerns I've been talking about.
Okay, so for instance, in Canada, they might, since it's being held so far away and workers don't have an opportunity to participate, they might just put down their tools for 10 minutes at the beginning of the day, or they might wear a black armband or something like that.
Those are some of the proposals I've heard talked about, yes.
Okay. Well, you also have other things that are happening with respect to corporate globalization much closer to home. Europe is the site of several big corporate global events this summer. We've seen two of them happen already. One was the meeting of the European Union in Gothenburg, Sweden, and the other just happened, which was the non-meeting of the World Bank in Barcelona, and you have a meeting of the G8 industrialized nations coming up in Geneva. It's a very busy place for you this summer.
Yes, it is. It's quite a focus of attention, and well, I think some of the same things we've been talking about with regard to the WTO apply also to the meetings in Europe. There is a kind of a feeling of disaffectation, I think, of citizens from the political process, which led to some of the protests in Gothenburg, which are likely to see the same sorts of things happening in Genoa in 3 weeks' time. And, I mean, the Italian authorities are very worried about that sort of prospect. And have even talked about changing to a different venue, which is more controllable, I suppose, than Genoa is. Although it doesn't look like they will change it now because they're too far underway with planning for Genoa. But I think it's the same sorts of issues are coming up again and again at all these international fora. The same reasons were behind the World Bank cancelling its Barcelona meeting, and it does show the need for these international organisations to open up and to start to include basic questions of concern to people around the world in their day-to-day working.
Okay. When the Gothenburg meeting happened, the European Union meeting, what we saw in the U.S. press for the most part was talk about the shooting of the three protesters and also just a few pictures of mayhem. I read in other locations that there were 20,000 people protesting. Are these protests broader than what we see in the mainstream press?
Well, I think for every person who turns up on the street in a particular meeting, there are going to be another 10 or 100 who are feeling the same way, but who haven't, travelled to a different country, perhaps, to make their views felt. There was a protest in Gothenburg of about 20,000 people, quite a generally a rather peaceful one. The meeting of the European Union in Nice last December, which was the big conference that adopted the EU's program of action for the next 5 or 6 years, the whole enlargement process, that one was met by a demonstration organized by the trade unions of 80,000 people on the streets of Nice, coming from all over Europe to make the case for a strong social dimension to the European integration process, and for basic workers' rights to be guaranteed as well. So I think there is, throughout the European Union movement, which is over 60 million people, there is a very, very strong effort to get social concerns included in the EU agenda as well. And that's particularly important now, of course, as they turn towards enlargement, towards the former East Bloc countries, which are, should be coming into the European Union in a few years' time.
Okay. And So in Geneva, what specifically will the G8 be talking about, and will the message be any different at that meeting, or is that will it be more of the same, simply recognize us, don't tear down our social protections, the economy has to work for everyone or else we shouldn't do these changes?
Well, I think at the Genoa meeting they're going to have to look at issues like trying to take some sort of global measures to get the world economy going a bit faster, because with the threat of a recession in the States or reduced growth in the States, I think it's going to make a lot of other countries rather nervous around the world, and there will be a lot of discussion there of how to get unemployment down, how to stop the U.S. Problems from leading to a global escalation, a global recession. So that'll certainly be number one on the agenda, I think, for the Genoa meeting. They will look also at things like the WTO Qatar meeting. And our message there, and we're going to have a big public conference on the 18th of July, where we're hoping to have people like Nelson Mandela taking part and other senior figures from North and South to contribute to that discussion. And we will be taking a strong message to the G8 that they need to include social concerns in their discussions, or they're going to see an acceleration of the kind of distancing of people from the political process, which has been, I think, the growing problem of the last few years in the, industrialized countries, especially around the world.
Okay. Well, and finally, I guess I'd just like to wrap up and ask what you would recommend that workers in the United States do to help ensure that workers' rights are guaranteed on a global scale. We've mentioned a little bit of that, but if you had any final words on that.
Well, firstly, I'd say, of course, that you should go to the AFL-CIO, our affiliates in the U.S., and talk to them about the actions they'll be undertaking on that day. It's Friday, November the 9th, is the day that the WTO meeting begins. And I'm sure that the AFL-CIO will be organizing different sorts of events and actions of different sorts to make a difference there. And the number one issue, I think, in the States over the next few months is that of Trade Promotion Authority, where the AFL-CIO are campaigning very strongly against the provision of that authority to the present trade bills being proposed by the administration, which are not including anything at all in terms of labor and environmental clauses. And so I think our number one message to the workers in the States would be to do what they can to support that campaign and to work to talk to their own political representatives in Washington to support that that call for denial of trade promotion authority until such time as there is a reasonable deal being offered and something which can include those labor and environmental questions, which are so important.
Okay, thank you very much for your time today.